I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from the Springs Rescue Mission in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Come along and join CEO Jack Briggs as he shares fascinating insights about why the facility is a nationwide trendsetter. And it's not rocket science. Springs Rescue Mission's success is predicated on transactions, incentives, and partnerships. There are less than 500 homeless living on the streets in Colorado Springs, while there are cities of comparable size with more than 5,000 people living on the streets. Come along and join retired two-star general Jack Briggs to discover the rest of the story and discover why the facility's model could easily be replicated in cities across America. Springs Rescue Mission CEO Jack Briggs.
When people come in here, they're coming in for safety and security. No one ever asks me about our yoga schedule ever, or our lazy river, or anything like that. We don't have those. We have safety and security because people want to come here and be safe. And that's the biggest thing. And that transition, when we enclosed the campus and created this single point of entry, we changed our dynamic significantly from about 25% women to about 45%. And that's because it was the first time people could be safe. We're a Christ-centered, low-barrier gospel rescue mission. We don't test people about their faith before they come in. We want to meet them right where they're at. What it's about is us. We are Christ-centered. We are focused on meeting people at their point of need. Low barrier. There is almost nothing that can keep you from coming in. Just ask you to be polite, don't fight, don't bring drugs or alcohol onto campus, even though you can be high when you come here. You can be justice involved, you could be a sex offender, you can have committed domestic violence. We have our own security. Our security is here to de-escalate, not to try to keep people out, but to try to keep people in if we can. But at times, folks might behave in a way that's unsafe for others. And if that's the case, then they'll get some sort of restriction for a period of time. You never argue somebody to heaven. Oh, I'm here because I lost an argument. No, that's somebody's choice. They have agency to make those choices. Regardless of their personal situation, we believe they have worth. Sometimes I get into little discussions with people, you know, that aren't real supportive of our faith thing. They come from a different world, and that's fine. Their worldview is different. Do you think people have worth? Everybody says yes. So now that we agree on one thing, we can disagree on where that worth comes from, but we agree that person has worth. So are you brave enough to work with me to do this one thing for this one person, this one time, to make it better for them? I'm brave enough to do it with you, and I'm not going to ask you to change who you are. Don't ask us to change who we are. Let's work together to do that. And when we find that people work together, we start to demystify each other a little bit. And we go, you know what? You're not as bad as I thought you were. Well, it's like, I don't think you're as bad as I thought you were, too. Let's do more of that. That tends to be what happens, particularly in Colorado Springs. So in Colorado Springs, just to give you some numbers, I'm going to compare us to three different cities that are kind of the same sizes. That's not exactly, but kind of. Downtown Denver, downtown San Francisco, downtown Portland, and Colorado Springs with El Paso County, somewhere north or south of between 700,000 and 800,000 people. In any of those three cities, you're going to see 3,000 to 7,000 people on the street every night. These are HUD numbers. These aren't mine. 3,000 to 7,000 people. Well, that's not in a shelter or a hotel. That's on the street. For us, Colorado Springs, that number's under 400. And that's because we all work together. We choose to do that. We choose to put our pitchforks down.
So in addition to the number that spend the night at Springs, there's another 400 on the street?
Roughly. And there's about 250 of them that we probably aren't going to see at the rescue mission. They have a variety of reasons. They're personal reasons, and we're not going to make somebody come here. Could be legal issues, could be drug, alcohol issues, could be the rumors and reputation that we have that we're going to ask you all, you know, to quote all of your best 10 commandments, you know, and if you don't do that, you can't. It's not true. But, you know, rumors get spread, and I'm not going to try to browbeat somebody into being here. It's voluntary. It's a voluntary choice to be here. But if they come here, we're going to give our best shot at keeping them safe and secure and helping them move away from addiction, homelessness, and poverty. You know, when you come into our shelter the very first time, you're going to encounter a very important concept. And that concept dominates. It's the number one principle of the street. And that concept is transaction. Everything that happens on the street is based on transaction. Same with prison, gangs, prostitution, drug dealing. It's all about what are you going to trade. And that's typically bodies, food, money, drugs, alcohol, power. You're going to trade those things. We try to twist that for good. Because if you just give somebody something on the street, and the number one question that I get, absolutely number one, is, hey, Jack, when I pull up to the stoplight and someone has a sign, what should I do? And I know why people ask. It's because they feel guilty. Guilt is about you. It's not about the person that you're going to help. You just want it to make it go away. And so what can I do to make this feeling go away? And I'm going to tell you that the answer to the question about what to do is it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you give them something or not. In fact, when you give them something, typically you're creating a power differential in their mind subconsciously because that's where they live. If you do this and I don't do anything back, I kind of owe you a little bit, right? So the way to shake that up is to do what we do. When you encounter somebody, ask them their name. Hey, what's your name? Because nobody ever asks a homeless person what their name is. And when they answer caveman or sugar or candy, that's their street name. Say, no, what's your name? Oh, my name's Stephanie. It's nice to meet you. My name's Jack. That transaction is between equals because your name and my name are no better than each other. They're the same. We're equals. Doing that is a better exchange than giving them anything because you can't change their situation with anything that you give them in the long term. You just can't. How do we instill this in everything that we do? And so we look for opportunities for transaction in everything that we do because the more transaction we can have, the more worth we can reestablish. They already have worth. We already made that clear, but they forgot. The things that they've had to do to survive have chipped away at their ego, at their id, at their own version of their own esteem. And so we want to reestablish things that can build that back. They already have it. We just want them to rediscover it. So as we go around today, we're going to see opportunities that we have built into our process for three things: transactions, incentives, and partnerships. Those three things together are why Colorado Springs has an approach that seems to be working better than other places. I'm not condemning those other places. They've got big problems. You know, Denver has a different issue than we do. They sit at the crossroad of two interstates. We're on an interstate, right? So we're not really a destination the same way that Denver is. So Denver's got a different problem, but that doesn't mean they can't approach it in more effective ways.
San Francisco, what would you do?
People that are very diligently trying to solve the problem, I just don't agree with the way that they're doing it.
What would you do?
Well, the first thing I'd probably do is I would make a recognition that incentives matter. The more you incentivize somebody to go to a particular place to get a particular set of services, the better off you're going to be. We'll mention later on when we go through the tour this idea of a resource center and resource and navigation center where you bring resources to one place and you let folks know that if they come to this one place, they can then get services. Well, if more and more people come because that's where the services are at, the incentive, then more folks will bring their services to that place because that's where the clients are at. And you start to build a place where the services can meet individuals and start to work on them individually, because right now when you have a San Francisco or these other cities that have these big problems, they're past the tipping point. They're trying to disparately spread out services around the city. It's ineffective because there's no mass of effort. You know, it's a military principle. You mass resources for success. So you mass the resource of provision with the folks, and it starts to be a flywheel, and you'll start to pick this up, and you can start to address individuals to reduce the population. You're not trying to build a bigger pie of resources. You're trying to develop your pie eaters. So the pie can actually eventually get smaller because you have fewer pie eaters trying to get at the pie. And the more pie eaters you have to make a bigger pie. That's not it. You want it to do the opposite.
In the city, are there other homeless shelters?
We have a variety of different service providers that are specialized in what they do, whether it's families or veterans. They have different niches, LGBT, youth, you know, there's a variety, but none of them are low barrier except us, right? That's the key, is we're the low barrier for single adults. What that means is there's no other place besides us if somebody is looking for services and they don't know where to go. So they're going to come here. Now, do we have to be the answer for everybody? No, but we want to help provide the answer. We're going to mosey now. We have a dental truck that comes every Tuesday and it provides dental care for folks. And again, it's an opportunity for transaction because as they are getting their dental care, those folks get to bill Medicare. And we help sign people up for that all the time. The other health thing that is important for folks to understand about folks on the street is it's not just their teeth, but their feet. feed is a big deal. So we, every quarter, do a UC Medical School foot clinic. So students come here in a rotation along with podiatrists. And then we have folks that can create the shoes and the prosthetics or everything. They all come together every quarter. Of course, we really like this because these medical students wash the feet of the homeless. Then the podiatrist will do a diagnosis and say, okay, you need something for your feet or your toes or something like that. And then the folks that make those will make them, bill Medicare, and then they'll bring them back and we'll get them to the clients, teeth and feet. And that's not the only healthcare that we do, but it's just two examples. As a faith-based organization, one of the things that Jesus did in the Last Supper was he washed the feet of all of the disciples. And so it's very significant for us. So this is our dining facility. It used to be where we came in and the metal detector was. That was our old kitchen, and you could seat about 65 people at a time. Now we get roughly 200. They don't have to wait out of the cold or the heat. They can just come in here and get served. And you'll see folks that are part of one of our work programs, and it's part of one of our vocational training programs. When people come off the street, they are not work ready often. They don't have really the ability to concentrate more than anything. It's not that they don't have the skills, maybe, but it's just they can't concentrate. A lot of time, meth or fentanyl or heroin. And so we're trying to build that back up. And they'll get small tasks to do if they choose to do that. They don't have to get services. There's no requirement for anybody to do that. They choose it on their own to join one of our programs. There's a faith-based program that they can join. We kind of like that program the best because we believe it's our secret sauce. But that doesn't mean you can't get other programs to help with health, work, and housing. So somebody that doesn't want to do that, they still get access. So you come in here and you just see that they're doing these tasks as we go. So now we're going to come in here. Oops. This is our kitchen. This is where we do all of our meal preparation. But I want to point out something very significant. We have a catering social enterprise. It's the third largest in the city. It's run by Matt there. Matt 2, because Matt 1, he runs all of our food servicing. Both of them are graduates of our men's addiction recovery program. They have a background in food service. If you know anything about food service industry, there's a lot of addiction that happens there. That's what happened to those gentlemen. But they came to us, went through our program, started working, and then have slowly but surely come to these positions of responsibility. The folks that operate inside our catering business are all part of our program. And then you'll see in here we have volunteers, we have staff, we have clients, and they're all in different levels of working here as we go. It's going to be hard to hear, but I love to show this. This is our dish pit, and this is where folks start when they come to us, if they're going to be in the food service program. This dish pit is larger than our old kitchen. When we built this, it became one of the best kitchens in the city, and it's a teaching kitchen. So in here, you can see a variety of folks. You'll see folks that are volunteers. You'll see folks that are in our women's and men's programming. You'll see graduates of our program that we have hired. You'll see full-time staff in the back. They all work together. This side does meals for our clients and staff. That side does preparation for our catering. And the catering is high-end. This summer, we did 10 straight days of 1,000 people a day. Think about that out of here. For the Air Force Academy, as an example. If you go to Hudson News at the airport and you want to get a tempting turkey and cheese, we made it. So we provide that to at Colorado Springs Airport. We do the food for Hudson News, right? The big Denver airport asked if we could make 2,000 a day. They would pick them up in the morning. We just don't have the staff to do it, or we would do it there too. On these, we're also going to have a QR code that you can look, and you'll get the story behind who made your meal. Okay, so I'm just going to pull Thursdays. I don't know what's on it. So it's biscuits and gravy with fruit, chicken curry rice and vegetables, spaghetti bread and garden salad soup. There's this sort of misnomer about rescue missions. It's soup and a sermon kind of a thing. That's not it's food. You need food, like real food, like with fats and protein and carbohydrates, because probably all you've been eating is garbage food out on the street, right? Or from the convenience store or something like that. So we're trying to get good food in you. We get supported through a variety of different programs. We have some of the big farmers in El Paso County that provide us with vegetables. We have ranchers that donate protein to us. We have one rancher who remains anonymous who buys up all of the 4-H animals at the end of the state fair and has them prepped, and then we get the protein for that, as an example. We also work with the Broadmoor, which is a big fancy hotel here in town. Years ago, they bought us a refrigerator truck. When they overcook for one of their conferences, they will provide us with notification. We go up there, it's all temperature controlled. We'll get that food and then we'll bring it back here, and their filet mignon we will repurpose for our clients as we go. So it's a partnership in the community to support all of this. We get a lot of corporate support. You'll see Pepsi, Coke, Panera, King Supers, a lot of the businesses
that's
in town
donated.
Are all donating food to us as well. Plus we have contracts with U.S. Foods and some federal programs. Another example of one of the businesses in town is Perkins Motors. They've been around since the beginning. In fact, the couple that wanted to make those sandwiches are related to the Perkins, so they've been here since the beginning. And they lease us vehicles so that we can move our food around for our food services and then sometimes our clients. The other pathway, they can work in facilities maintenance. And they'll start off doing basic janitorial skills, and then they will grow their skills as they learn how to do this. The other thing that I want to point out here is we do our own facilities maintenance, except for the big stuff. But what you see over here are examples of creativity. So one of the most important things we need to understand about folks on the street is they've lost their sense of creativity, whether that's food or that's maybe using their hands and skills to create something purely for the idea of creativity. And when we can get that back into somebody's mindset, that helps significantly to help them like reestablish the fact that they have something besides just survival skills that they can do. And so you'll see a variety of different things. One of the most popular things that we get made are cutting boards. When people put cutting boards together, we raffle them off, and they are incredibly popular, I will just have to say. Nightly shelter. This is the classic that you would expect for a homeless shelter. They come in here for the night and then they leave in the morning. They're in by 10. We have a curfew. They're out by 7, and I mean out. They don't have to leave the facility, but they can't be in their bed. Now, why is that? Because we don't want to lose the idea that they got to get up and go to work, or they got to get up and take care of their kids, right? So these are things that we're training. This is the women's side, and that's the men's side. Now, some people ask us this, and I'll just be very clear about this. If you identify as female, you come over here. If you identify as male, you go over there. We've been doing this for years. We've never, ever had an issue, because people don't understand something about this. Folks that are coming to us at the low barrier level, they are so low on the Maslow hierarchy of needs. All of that stuff that people are trying to talk about is not a factor. They're looking to be safe. They're looking to eat something and sleep without getting assaulted. That's about it, right? And we provide that. Now, at some point, they may get to a point where they're stable enough to go, you know what? This really isn't for me. Okay, we'll connect you with maybe an LGBT program in the community, because we're the only low barrier for them. There's no place else for them to go, and we are not going to turn them away, because I want them to stay alive. That's it. That's the whole, okay, there you go. You can accuse me of all kinds of stuff, but that's what you will get when we do this, okay? So you'll come in here. Now, here's the transaction. If you're just coming in and not using any of our other services, you're just sleeping and eating with us, your breakfast is at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's typically going to be like oatmeal with fruit, coffee, some sort of muffin, something like that. People argue with me when they first get here about this, like, did you know? And I'm like, yeah, I kind of did. First of all, oatmeal's good for you, so we're not going to argue about that, okay? But the second thing is, I know how you can get a 7 o'clock in the morning. You left here at 7, you can go right over and get a 7 o'clock in the morning egg and bacon breakfast. Well, Jack, how do I do that? You go over to our resource center, which we're going to show you, and you sign up for just a basic evaluation. Like, what's your health? What's your mental health? What are you addicted to? What did you used to do? And we get people that come here. Not everybody that came here is coming from maybe the streets of, you know, being a dealer or something like that. We've got business people. We've got people who were moms and dads and just regular old folk, and they started using heroin or meth or fentanyl. You start doing fentanyl or meth, you're probably going to live here, because you're going to sell everything you got, and then you're going to be on the street after your car, right? And then you're going to come here. So what did you used to do? Airline pilot? Pastors, you name it. So we want to know what you used to do. Plus, we want you to talk to our chaplain. Not because we're trying to convert you, but because the guy's a great listener. And he needs to hear your story. You got to get your story out. What happened to you when you were an 8-year-old and your parents were heroin addicts? Terrible things. Terrible. And so we got to get that out, right, if you're going to have any chance of recovery. So these are the things. If you do that, you get an egg and bacon breakfast. What just happened there? Transaction. You earned it. It's yours. I'm not going to take it away from you. That's your agency as you do this, right? That's key.
So is that something that you would look to do to separate?
So here's one of those ideas about, you know, the community. So Salvation Army and a couple other places, they focus on families. We focus on the folks that are adult. And the reason we focus on adults is, and not families, is because we take sex offenders. And so somebody that's a sex offender, you can't have kids around them. So that's why we don't do that. But it's the other thing is we don't have to be the answer for everything in the community. We just want to be able to get you an answer if you come to us, veteran, families. If a family comes here because they're trying to escape domestic violence, we're going to protect them and then we're going to connect them with a service that's not us. Because somebody else can specialize in that. And that's what helps raise, you know, all of the effect that we have in town. You know, people will want to donate to different kinds of things. And if everybody was trying to do all of it together or in competition, you have what I affectionately call the nonprofit Hunger Games, and everybody's trying to get their own piece of the pie, right? Well, we do our part, other organizations do their part. Sometimes when I give tours at the end of it, people will say, you know, I thought I would volunteer here, but I really don't see anything that I like. I'm like, okay, what do you like? Oh, I really like young women with children. Okay, we know them. Let's connect you with them. You mean you're not going to take my donation? You should donate to them. That's what you want to do. It's going to raise everybody's boat here, right? That's what we're about. This facility, we're 14 acres. I want to pause here for just a second again. So those are storage bins. They aren't garbage bins. Our clients run a program where when you come in the morning and in the evening, you get access to a bin. It is assigned to you. And you can get your stuff in or out twice a day. But if you're in our programming and you progress, I'll trade you one of those bins for a Red Locker, because you can get to your Red Locker all the time. What just happened? A transaction again. As you continue to improve, the more you get, and the more we're going to respond, right? It's not just you doing more, it's us doing more as well, because that's the idea of what goes on out there when you start looking for jobs, when you're looking for relationships with people. It's all about that training to try to help people reestablish those basic relationship skills, work skills, all of those sorts of things as they're going through addiction recovery or mental health challenges as well. And again, you'll see examples of folks sitting in line, right? It's fine with us. This is safe, right? I do want to point out for our Cali folks here, if you came here on the third Monday of the month, right there, parked, that goes from about where that clock is to maybe that second door, is an In-N-Out burger truck. So everybody gets a double-double with cheese for lunch. A couple of things are happening here. The first is it gives my staff just a respite for a meal. They don't have to prepare that particular meal. But the real motivator here is people will come in off the street because they want to get a hamburger. It's our opportunity to introduce ourselves to them. They don't have to do anything. They just got to come in. We get their name. They come in, they get their burger, they leave. It's fine with us. We don't care. Very popular, by the way. In-N-Out donates that each month. It's done by a variety of different folks. Chick-fil-A does it. Barbecue places that do it. And it just helps us out. Pot us on a great day, because this is our next step. So if you're in our programming and you choose to work towards sobriety, you can come over here. And these bunks you get for a week. But you're seeing what we do every week is we have them gather up their things. If it was any other time, you'd see that their beds would be made and they would have their clothes hanging. Because you can leave your stuff in here for the week. But every week, we have you wrap your stuff up, they take it outside, and we, quote, deep clean. Now, that is totally made up. Why is it made up? Because people stay here, they don't live here. I don't want folks to create the image in their mind that this is their forever home. So we put a little sand in the gears to do that. The way we back that up is when they come back in, they won't get the same bed.
Right now.
Right now, yeah. We've done the deep cleaning, and then when they come back in tonight, they'll get a new bed. And I get complaints. Hey, Jack, why can't I have my bed back? And the answer is, it's not your bed, it's mine. So, you know, and again, I love you, but we don't want you to feel like this is your forever place. So this is our next step. That's our advanced shelter program. Folks that are in that program are actually paying a program fee to us. Everybody that's over there is sober. They're working outside the rescue mission, but they probably don't have enough resources yet to go get an independent place to live. So they come to us, they pay us a little stipend each month, and then when they leave, we'll return part of that so they can help with their first costs when they first move into someplace. Beds. So beds are numbered. So you'll see these numbers. So this is 60A. One of the unique things that Cameron and the rest of the development team came up with is the idea of what we call the Good Samaritan Sponsor Program. And in that, you can sponsor that bed for $25 for one day, right? So $25 pays for somebody in that bed for everything for a day, food, shelter, clothing, medical care, everything. This has been very popular, particularly with millennials and Gen Zs, because older folk like me, we gave to organizations because we trusted the organization to go ahead and do whatever they do. Think United Way. Millennials and Gen Zs are much more interested in, like, what impact am I making? So with this, and you get a little magnet that goes on your refrigerator and it says 69B, right? And you can think about 69B, you can pray about it, but you can also write a note to whoever's in 69B, an anonymous note. And particularly with our older women, there's two groups of people that are starting to be seen more and more as homeless, women and people that are older, right? The aging population. When they get a note like that, sometimes they can't see their grandkids because of alcohol or whatever it is, but they get a note from a little girl that says, I'm praying for you tonight, and I hope you sleep. They brought me those notes and said, look at this. It's almost like I got it from my granddaughter, who I'm not allowed to see yet. I want to get back to being able to see her. Agency, dreams, we can help with that through activities, celebrating consistently good behavior. And those are kinds of things that we're really focused on once somebody makes a decision that they want to get better. You can have food over here, you can't over here. Why don't we let food? Is because of cleanliness, pests, those sorts of things. But over here we have storage for those sorts of things. When you come in, you're going to get one of these areas that's yours, and it's more privacy, and there's no curfew on this side. And you can bring food in. So someone will be out there and they'll bring their pizza in from dinner, and these folks get to smell pizza on this side, and they say stuff like, I like pizza. How do I get pizza? Well, come on over here. Let's work on that, right? Let's take that next step, right? So everything is graduated. You started off a meth addict. You came in. You're just hanging out on the rest in the shelter, back and forth, getting food, but not really doing anything. And then you say, you know what? I really want that egg and bacon breakfast that Jack was talking about. Maybe I'll go talk to, you know, the healthcare folks. And you get that breakfast, and then you're like, you know what? I'm starting to feel better. I'm getting some food. I'm starting to realize that I matter. You know what? I think I want to get sober and come over here. And when I'm over here, I can see this. If I took a meth addict and showed him this to start with, their head would explode because it's just too much, right? So you got to do this in steps to get people to feel the momentum. That's what's key. So again, no sit lie. You have the opportunity to be here. And you'll see they congregate in little groups. They don't congregate in big groups. And that's just because their trust is low. And so they're only going to trust certain people. What that does is it also stems the tide of, like, during COVID, we didn't have a lot of bread at the rescue mission because people don't get in big groups. They stay in small groups. So that small group might have gotten sick, but not a big group. Okay, so this is the resource, or actually this is the day center. What we're creating is an expansion. What you saw in the construction over there is an expansion of this facility, because we already have showers and laundry on this site. But this is where you would come to maybe sign up for that bacon and egg breakfast kind of thing, that process. But anybody can come in here during the day, and when it's cold or hot, we'll expand around the campus for more space. You can charge phones. If you're super interested in watching any episode of, like, Little House on the Prairie or Bonanza, come on back. So you're going to come in here and you're going to get an opportunity to take a shower if you want. And we have extra clothing that people can get if they haven't had their clothing washed in a while. And I'll show you why that's important. Our chaplain is right there. It's that guy. That's our chaplain. And he is the best listener on the planet.
Which one?
A gentleman walking in a black jacket, walking away from us.
Okay.
So this is laundry. Okay, so we do your laundry for you. We do concierge laundry. You can't even get that at the Marriott. You know, why do we do that? There's four reasons. First one is they might argue over the machine, but they certainly, if a little soap is good, a lot of soap is better, and they'll break them, right? Because they just don't know how to use them. The third one is we're looking for any contraband or any dangerous items like needles or razors or something like that that people have stowed. And then the fourth reason, which is the real reason that we do this, is let's say you've been on the street for 6 months to a year, you haven't had your underwear washed, and you haven't taken a shower. You come in here, we get you some new clothes, you take a shower, your old clothes, you're going to take and you're going to put in one of these white bins that's right there, and you're going to walk away. And we promise you'll get it back better than you gave it to us. Why we do that is they live in a world where no one keeps their promises, ever. Ever. Even in the transactions, they never keep their promises. There's always an angle. So when we say this and we do it, they come back and they go, you know what? You guys kept your promise. It's like, yeah. Will you keep other promises that you make? Yes. So we'll promise you healthcare or training or just somebody to listen, right? We'll do that. And we'll live up to it. And we start to build trust again. We're going to go through here. This is the resource center. Okay, so I've talked about two things so far that are important. The first is transaction. The second is incentivization. When we talk about incentives, if you incentivize something, you get more of it. So imagine somebody that's on the street. They don't know where to go to get stuff. But every time they stand on that street corner, someone gives them stuff. That's the incentive. They will go back there because that's where they're incentivized. Instead, if you can bring resources to a place where people can come, they will be incentivized to come back to it, right? Because that's where they can get stuff. So that's what we do here. And the third thing is partnerships. So we have 50 plus partners that are from the community that have opportunities to service clients here, whether they are on location or they have remote locations that they can work here. Why is that important? And this goes to what you talked about where it's, we're sort of like, it's so big a problem, what do? This is what you do. You create a resource navigation center. Because what's happening in these big cities is they're past the tipping point. They don't have enough organized services to provide individualized service to people to get them out of the situation that they're in. So they just go to the aggregate. They do housing, food, pretty much it, right? That's not going to reduce the population because they're just going to be getting food and shelter. That's all. What you want to do is you want to tie people coming in to individual help going out. And you can do that in this sort of synergistic way, because if this is where services are at, people will come here to get the services. Well, if people are coming here to get the services, more services will want to be here to provide services. And you start to get this flywheel of more people coming because there's more services and the more services. So that's what we do in the community. And we don't charge people to be here. We want them to be here because we want them to do individualized attention to the clients to try to get them moving away from just the food and shelter. Now, using all of those resources does not require any kind of faith statement at all. I don't care. If you want to be here and use those services and we don't provide it but somebody else does, good. Right? Now, we like our program because we have data that shows that it sticks better because of the spirituality, faith-based part of it, but it's not a requirement for you to be here to be able to get services to help. And so you'll see that we've got facilities here, and then we've got some medical facilities that people can, and we also partner with, there's a clinic just down the street. It's the Medicare provider in town. They purposefully built that facility because it's close to the clients. So this is our work center. It's not super fancy. That's one of our instructors, our facilities instructors, and she's teaching them basic janitorial skills, right? So that you know what you're doing. This is when I go back to that 5 West Las Vegas is an address that businesses are like, oh yeah, it's because they're getting training, right? And they're starting off, and probably they're very new in the program, but they're getting started at a level that they can handle initially, right? It's like, how do you dust? How do you clean? How do you pick up? How do you mop? How do you, you know, the basic things, but how do you do it well, right? That's a key. So this is our work center, and it's not fancy because it doesn't need to be. These are El Paso County workforce computers. So businesses will put into a database positions. When you come in here and you start to get into the programming, you want to take that breakfast leap that Jack is talking about, You'll come in here and you'll create an electronic resume, probably the first one you've had, but it's going to go into this system, and as you progress with training through our training program, we'll add to your resume. And then by the time you get to the end of it, you'll actually have a resume that you can match with folks that are looking for employment, employees, right? And I've seen folks sitting right here with a headset on interviewing for a position, right? We'll get roughly 30 to 50 people a month will get a job outside of the rescue mission. And we'll help probably 20 to 25 people a month get housing outside of the rescue mission as we go. Jack Briggs, President and CEO of Springs Rescue Mission, been here about a little over 3 years. Prior to that, I was the Vice President for Public Safety for New York University for about 4 years. And prior to that, for about 30 years, I was a officer in the United States Air Force. I was a fighter pilot, and then I was a general officer when I retired, responsible for the operations for Northern Command, which is the defense of North America from basically the Arctic Circle down to Guatemala and the approaches. When I was a general officer here in Colorado Springs, prior to retiring, I was on the board of directors. When I retired, we moved to New York. My wife got 51% of the vote about where we were going to live next because our daughter lived in New York City. And she said, I want to move there. I said, right on. So I got a job at NYU. But my heart is still here in Colorado Springs. I'm a, kind of a Colorado Springs inside outsider, little kid here, went to school here, had assignments here. When you're a military person, you really, and my father was in the military, so I really didn't have home base except for here. They asked me if I might be interested in coming back when the then CEO wanted to retire, and I jumped at the opportunity. It was something that we wanted to come back to Colorado Springs anyway, and it was a great opportunity. I'm very committed to what happens here. You know, when I started this all off with, hey, Jack, what do I do when I see somebody on the street corner with a sign? And we talked about trading names. Well, if you've got enough time, the next thing you can do is you can say, hey, have you gone to the rescue mission? And the reason you can ask that question is, one, you've been here now, and you kind of know what we do, but anything that's on their sign, I don't care what's on their sign. You see, we have pets, we have places for you to store your stuff, work programs, health care, help with housing, all of those different things we can help address here at the Rescue Mission. So you could go to springsrescuemission.org. Springs Rescue Mission, Springs Rescue Mission with an S, .org, all one word, will get you to our website. We're having a book launch of how we do this. Been a year in the making because we got asked so many times, hey, can you guys just do this in our town? And we're like, no, you're going to have to figure out how to do it in your town. But here's some guidelines that we have used in Colorado Springs to have some success. It's based on transaction incentives, partnerships, and it's told through the eyes of a composite client. And then we try to intersperse some facts and things about homelessness. There's three target audiences: people who are leaders, maybe they can see it a different way, folks running for office in the next year, maybe they can campaign in a different way, and then finally just the general public to understand this, to put pressure on the first two groups, because that's where change will actually happen. And the book is called Meeting Homelessness with Hope, available, go to Amazon and, you know, whatever those kinds of things to get it. There are lots of programs in communities, and particularly from the federal government. One of them is Housing First. We actually operate a supportive housing unit. Yeah, I would give it a C, maybe a C minus. It's not as effective as what we do. It is what the federal government pushes. And we work with government. We're partners in a lot of different respects. We keep a bright line between our faith things that we do, and we only use donor money for that. We don't use public funds for those. We keep our public funds on the side that is for anybody to do anything at any time. That's totally open. People don't understand that sometimes, and that's okay. We try to explain it to people. But by doing this, we create what we call people first, or person first. It's like addressing them individually. And I think what Cameron is trying to emphasize there is that's unique. And there are not a lot of organizations that are focused in that same way. So I'm Jack Briggs. I'm the CEO of Springs Rescue Mission. I appreciate your time. And if you have further questions, please don't hesitate to ask. That's what we're here for.
Jack, thank you so much. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Colorado Springs.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
World Bicycle Relief partners with communities to deliver specially designed, locally assembled, rugged bicycles for people in need. Nearly 1 billion people in rural regions of the world live in communities far from the nearest paved road, walking miles every day just to survive. Distance is a barrier to attending school, receiving health care, delivering goods to market, and other critical services needed to thrive. Find out how you can help deliver rugged, dependable, life-changing bicycles to deserving communities. Log on to worldbicyclerelief.org to learn more.